It's time to take this game into overtime.
The official podcast
of the Average Joe's Sports Show
on 90.9 The Light Sports
for our generation.
All right, let's get right into it. The top five stories, Furious Five right now. Number one, how is politics going to affect sports? So Donald Trump is our president now. You don't see sports and politics mixed too often. You don't see them interact too much. But when you do see it happen, it's usually when a championship team wins. They always go and visit
Seattle,
the White House. What's going to happen here? Are we going to see players decline to go to the White House? What are we going to see happen, especially with politics and sports?
Bill Belichick put it best. Seattle. It's the only thing that it's not going to affect anything. Like, I mean, he got asked about, because he wrote a letter to Trump, and Trump read it at some rally in Boston, and the press started asking him about it, and literally the only thing he said to the press was Seattle, because that's the only thing he cared about, because that's who the Patriots are playing this weekend. And so, no, it's not going to have any effect on sports. I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous statement for people to think that this political election is going to have any outcome on the sports world. I really don't think it will.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen certain players in the past not go to the White House when Obama was in office, and there's probably people who
saw, I believe Tom Brady actually declined to go to the White House. I don't think it was anything political. He was just
was out of the country when he did that.
Yes, and something. He didn't go to the White House. Are we going to see more than that? I think we might this year. I mean, once he comes up in January, we're going to see the Super Bowl in February, and then that winning team. You might get one or two guys.
You know, I think people are going to get over it.
Oh, they will?
Yeah.
But February, March, he's only going to be in office a few months. We might see a little bit of that. Just a few guys here and there. I don't think it's going to be a big noise.
You know,
it'll be small, but people are quickly going to realize, like, he's not the greatest choice in the world, but he's not Hitler.
Right.
They're going to be like, okay, he said some mean things, but it's still the president of the United States, and for some of these athletes,
and you
may
respect
only,
the office.
Exactly, well, and you may only get the opportunity
once. We saw so many people in the limelight say, hey, give him a chance.
Yeah, even Hillary Clinton.
He's going to be our president. You have to give him a chance. He hasn't done anything yet.
Right.
I mean, what about ratings? I mean, we're going to talk about that a little later on, the NFL ratings decline. Do you think Donald Trump specifically has an effect on that right now? At least in the moment.
If he can get Roger Goodell out of the commissioner seat, then yes. But until then, no. It has nothing to do with Donald Trump.
No.
I'll disagree a little bit. I think just because he's so polarizing. I don't think it's a negative effect, but I think because Donald Trump is so polarizing, he's always on the news. So everybody was watching election news. They were always watching Fox News, CNN, kind of just, and they were caught up in the politics. I think because Donald Trump was there and he was so polarizing, whether you like him or you don't, it could distract a little bit from the ratings, but I don't think that's the main cause. We'll get into that a little more. Let's move on to the number two topic of the week. Colin Kaepernick back in the news, guys. He, on Tuesday, stated that he did not vote and that it did not matter who he put in office, so he did not feel like he needed to vote. What do you guys have to say? We saw Stephen A. Smith.
I was gonna say, I really just wish we could just play Stephen A.'s clip of him.
If we could do that, that'd be great. Stephen A. was going off on Kaepernick, and this is a guy who was supporting him up until this point, and then when he heard Kaepernick decided not to vote, he went off. So what do you guys have to say to that?
Well, he made this whole big deal about this issue that it was he was getting it, like people were supporting him about it. And then you don't go do your one civil right of just voting. And it's basically like saying you're having no voice in this election. And Kaepernick's whole thing was about having a voice. And I just don't get it. And I agree with Stephen A. Completely what he's done up to this point just doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't really make sense to me, because I've not backed Colin Kaepernick, but I've understood where he's coming from on his stance. But then to do all of this, and then, like David said, have the opportunity to kind of make your voice known, per se, and go in and vote and not do it doesn't make sense. And I get his comments about it, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's Hillary or Trump. There are other candidates you can vote for that can back at least what you're sticking for to just go out and vote. It does. I just don't get it. How are you going to cause all this uprise and really be a face that people look to for social issues and then not do anything to make actual change? It doesn't make sense.
And here's my favorite quote from Stephen A's thing the other day. He said, "After all this noise that you made, to turn around and not even take your behind to the polls to vote for a particular candidate, it is shameful, absolutely shameful." And it is. It is shameful.
He had some powerful words.
He did.
I mean, I tend to agree with you, Denton. I think I'm disappointed in Kaepernick. I'm disappointed in the words he decided to use here, saying that it didn't matter, that either one, they're both corrupt, they're both... All right, but we saw Ernie Johnson. Everybody's seen that video in the last few days. Ernie Johnson of TNT coming out and saying, "Hey, I don't like either of these guys, and it was really hard for me to go vote, but it's my civil duty, and I did it, and I voted somebody else."
Exactly.
In.
Even if you write in a vote, you
that's
know,
okay, as long as you go vote.
As long as it's not Harambe. Don't write in Harambe,
please. He got over 12,000 votes, by the way.
I think it was 15.
Was it 15? Yeah, no kidding.
That's ridiculous. Anyway, continue with sports.
But I mean, it just Ernie Johnson said, "Hey, I don't agree with these guys, but local elections are important. Hey, Kaepernick, you're in California. There's a lot of senators and governors up for election. Go vote for them. Go vote for all those local elections that really matter. That's going to really matter for your state rights. Go out there and make a difference." And I liked what Stephen A. said, because this is kind of distracting from what Kaepernick has said and done in the past. I mean, to go out there and take a knee, I supported Kaepernick. I saw his side more. I kind of sympathized with him. I had no problem with what he was doing. I thought the way he did it might have been wrong, but I didn't disagree with him. I like the change he's doing. He put up $1 million of his own money, and he's raising camps. He's hosting camps for kids and trying to make a difference. But then when you go and say your vote doesn't matter, I feel like that's disrespectful for those ancestors in the past that fought for the right to vote.
It's hypocritical.
It really is. I mean, we saw a lot of guys say, "This is hypocritical, Colin. You got to go out there. I don't care if you don't like Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Go out there and vote."
Okay, on a side note of that real quick, is anybody buying that Nick Saban really didn't know that November 8th was Election Day?
Hey, we'll get to that.
Like,
we'll get to that.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, I'm just saying.
He seems like a very focused individual, so I could actually kind of buy that.
Make sure you guys listen to the whole show. We'll talk about that a little more. All right, so number three topic in the Furious Five, Monday Night Football, Seattle Seahawks versus the Buffalo Bills. Great game, but we had a little bit of controversy right before halftime. Richard Sherman went to go block the field goal. Didn't get called for the penalty, the roughing the passer. John Gruden was really mad about that. He ended up getting fined just over $9,000 for that later in the week. What is your guys' take on Richard Sherman? Was that a penalty? Was it a dirty play? Or was it just a cheap shot?
I don't think it was a dirty play, because in the interview after, he said he was playing to the whistle. And if you've ever played football before, one of the things that coaches stress is playing to the whistle. So I understand where he's coming from with that point. And if you watch the replay, he did make some effort to at least get a hand or fingertip on the ball. The issue was not that his play in particular. I see the issue more as how the referees and the officials handled it. They didn't make the right call, because it was not running into the kicker. If you give him one of the penalties, it would have been a roughing, and that's what it should have been. They gave him running into the kicker, and then the way they spotted the ball and essentially kind of stood over it until the play clock was at 5 seconds, they didn't reset the play clock. It really just wasn't the proper way to handle it. And the NFL came out on Twitter and said, yeah, they handled it wrong. But the problem is that doesn't fix anything. You acknowledge that they did a bad job, but the Bills ended up missing that field goal, and that would have bought them to within, I believe, 3 points heading into halftime. And it wouldn't be too much of a different game, because at the end of the day, the Bills did have a shot to win it at the end. But it's definitely something that would have made a small difference, and the referees botched it. And especially in a time where the NFL is catching a little bit of heat now for not having full-time officials, this certainly doesn't help.
Yeah, and I think that I didn't see it myself, but I have read a lot about it in the past few days, and from what I can tell, the referees definitely did not handle it very well on the field. But
not at all.
You know, I don't like the league coming out and saying on Twitter and stuff afterwards about basically saying their refs made the wrong call. Like, support your guys. Support your guys with whatever calls they made. I know that somebody like Cam Newton's got some stuff about the hits he's taken lately. This isn't something else that's been talked about. But I don't know. The refs these days they're struggling a little bit, but you know, you gotta, as the league, I think you have to sort of stand behind your guys more than you are. But yeah, Richard Sherman is I think he's right on this. I personally would take his side. I would say that, you know, especially if he sees the kicker going to try to actually attempt the field goal, I have no problem with him trying to block it.
Then do you have a problem with how NFL fines all their players the day after, 2 days after? Do you have a problem with Richard Sherman getting fined here?
I do, because I don't think he did anything wrong. He didn't do anything that was outside of a football play. And that's my thing with it.
Yeah, fining him for this is actually ridiculous when you think about it. If you come out and critique your officials for getting it wrong, that's one thing, but right. You can't fine a guy because your officials got the call wrong.
Yeah.
In the scope of the game, what he did was fine because he's playing to the whistle.
Right.
When you take a look back at it, it's like, well, yeah, that was a kind of a late hit, and it should have been fine-worthy, but in the game it wasn't. So I don't like that. If Sherman gets fined, at least my opinion is the officials should get fined as well, because they're the ones that butchered that, not Richard Sherman.
I think that's a great take.
I agree with that, yeah.
I mean, I was very confused after this. You saw during the game, John Gruden blatantly call out the refs for that play and say that was a roughing the kicker penalty. Gruden was going off. He wanted that penalty right there that Richard Sherman did not get. Kind of cost Buffalo at least that field goal there. Maybe threw him off a little bit more. But then I was curious. I wanted to see what everybody was saying the next day on Tuesday morning. So I was trying to pay attention to ESPN as much as I could. And it seemed like most of the guys on ESPN agreed that should have been roughing the kicker. It wasn't a dirty play. It was just kind of like a cheap shot.
Yeah, it was just a missed call.
It was a missed call. And does that warrant a fine? Probably not. But the refs messed up there and probably cost Buffalo. What do you guys think? Did this cost Buffalo the game or just the field goal? Does this end up haunting Buffalo and Rex Ryan, who is on the hot seat as the coach?
It did not cost them the game. That play did not cost them the game. But had they made that field goal, it could have changed something in the second half. So you never know about that. But I mean, it's hard to say if that one play cost them the game. But it could have changed it could have changed the outcome.
Yeah, it definitely had some impact. But I was looking at Twitter, and I believe it was Scott Van Pelt who tweeted this. It's a lot different when this certain play happens at the end of the first half as opposed to somewhere in the third quarter,
yeah,
where the game would have been drastically different. Because you're going into halftime, it's like, well, they have three more points. And certainly that could have made a difference in just the play calling in the second half, but it's a lot different than had it happened in the third quarter or late in the fourth quarter.
Well, real quick, we saw Tyrod Taylor kind of light up the Seattle defense a bit. He put up, I believe, 289 yards. He had a touchdown. Didn't have any wide receivers. Didn't have Sammy Watkins in this game. Still put up 25 points for Buffalo. Is this a different Seattle defense that we're used to seeing? They're 10th in passing yards per game allowed and 12th in rushing yards a game allowed. Is this different Seattle defense? I mean, they're not that top five, top three defense anymore. Yards wise.
No, I mean, I definitely think it's still the same defense. They're getting a little bit older. They're getting a little bit to the point where they're not going to be as good as they used to be. They're still the same attacking defense. Even Tom Brady said it himself this week. They're still one of the best defenses in the league. I believe they're the top scoring defense in the league. And so, I mean, I wouldn't want to play against them. So,
the funny thing is, in 2013. This defense was absolutely sensational. But I guess the issue with that was a lot of those guys were very young then, and they were playing on rookie deals. So when those deals expire, you got to pay people, and you can't pay everyone. So they lost Bruce Irvin, who was a sensational linebacker for them. He's now with Oakland. Brandon Browner is gone, which I think is kind of for the better because he can't cover anybody with speed. It's just a little bit of a different designed defense. Their secondary is still one of the tops in the league, and their pass rush is still great. But I see the weakness kind of being that linebacker position because they have lost a little bit of guys. But I do still think that Wagner is one of the better unnoticed linebackers in the league. So the defense is still great, but it's certainly – it's hard to top that 2013 defense that we kind of know them for because it was honestly one of the top three defenses in football history.
Well, we've seen a few injuries on that defense as well. I believe Bennett has been out the last few weeks. You know, it happens over years. You're not going to keep the same guys. Money happens. It happens. But we're going to move on. Number four topic, NCAA basketball is back. David, I know you're excited for this.
I am pumped.
UNC had a big game last night. They won. Had a few games last night. We saw a big upset in Indiana beating Kansas in overtime.
I love watching Kansas crumble. It happens every year.
I'm excited for college basketball besides my UConn Huskies losing. That really got me mad last night. I don't want to talk about it. But we're going to move on. What are you guys excited about most for college basketball to be back?
I like the atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere in general is just unbelievable.
Something is different, and I love NBA basketball, but something about the atmosphere is so different with college. I think it's more because people are, you know, so heavily associated with the school because they go there and they live there. But the atmosphere is just so different. The fans are incredible. And upsets. I mean, upsets are one of the biggest things that make college sports so enjoyable because they mean a lot more than they do in professional sports. And that's, I think that's the best thing that college basketball has to offer.
And I agree. I mean, it's just one of those times of year, you know, March Madness is going to get here before you know it. And if that's not your favorite time of year, then I don't know what is. Other than maybe
it hurts my soul when two of MLB my final playoffs, four teams maybe. Go down in the first week, but I love March Madness.
Well, real quick, let me give you guys the top five ranking wise. Duke number one, Kentucky two, Kansas three. They'll be pushed out because they lost last night. But Villanova four and Oregon five.
Carolina can jump into that top
Carolina
five.
Carolina is the sixth seed. They could top take Kansas's spot in the top five. Which one of these teams? Obviously, we know Duke, number one, they are the favorite right now. They've got a lot of talent on that team. Do you think they should be the favorite, overwhelmingly favored, or just the number one team?
I wouldn't say overwhelmingly favorite, just because this class hasn't shown that they, like, this senior class has not shown that they can win a championship. But anytime you've got Coach K, Grayson Allen, you've got to put them up there in the favorites. They play in the toughest college basketball conference in the country, the ACC, which I think is
no debate,
the toughest conference.
Not even close.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's going to be interesting. They're going to lose some games this year. It's going to happen just because when you play that high of quality teams week in and week out, you're going to have a bad night every now and then. It's just going to happen. So, you know, I would put Duke as my favorite. I'm really looking forward to the Duke Carolina matchups this year. You look forward to them every year.
You don't have to be an ACC fan to watch those games.
But this year, I am really looking forward to it because I think they are going to be both very highly ranked whenever we get to that point, and that hasn't always happened the past couple of years.
This could be the first time in a very, very long time that we see a 1-2 Duke Carolina matchup, which would be
insane. It could be. Yes.
And I guess right now Duke would be the favorite, but if we know anything in college basketball, there's no overwhelming favorites. You could look back just a couple years ago when Kentucky was undefeated and then lost to Wichita State, and I believe it was either the Elite Eight or the Sweet 16. So they can have a great year, but up until March, there is no favorite. Even the freshman classes, they're good, they're great, but they're hurt right now. And it's going to be very different when those guys get healthy. It's going to mess with the chemistry a little bit. They're the favorite right now, but not by an overwhelming margin.
Okay, besides our favorite teams, I'm a UConn fan. David, I know you're a UNC fan. Denton, I know you're a Maryland fan. So put those three teams aside. They're both going to have great seasons. All three of the teams hopefully have great seasons. But besides those three teams, what team are you most excited to watch this season going into the year other than your favorite team?
Honestly, I'm going to stick in the ACC, and a team that I really like because I love the way they're coached is UVA. I think Tony Bennett does a great job with coaching, and it seems like they can pick and plug guys in who don't seem to be, they're not the most athletic, they're not the best shooters in the world, they're not the best rebounders in the world, but they plug guys into the right system, and it's just good fundamental basketball. And that's one of the things I like a lot, is the fundamentals showing through and kind of pushing through athleticism, so to speak. So I really like UVA, and I'm excited to see them this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think UVA, I'm not really I don't really know how to put this, but I think Arizona might be my one team to watch.
A little bit of West Coast basketball?
Yeah, you don't get to see the Pac-12 play that much, and I would watch out for Oregon. I think the Pac-12 could be a very underestimated conference in basketball this year.
Oregon scores a lot.
Their uniforms are always fire. And that's important. You got to look good to play good.
That's true.
So, I mean, and did anybody watch the Pearl Harbor games yesterday?
Caught a little bit.
I didn't get to see any of those.
I thought the uniforms they wore were awesome.
Yeah,
like I did like the uniforms.
Military
yeah.
tribute uniforms. Those were nice. Those are sweet. Yeah, those were awesome.
Some of the ones they're wearing college football this weekend are sensational.
I know. Yes.
I mean, most interesting team other than UConn. It's hard for me to say. It's so early. That loss last night really put me in a damper for NCAA basketball. But I really like what Texas is doing. I love Shaka Smart. I want to see him. I believe this is his second year at Texas.
Yes.
I want to see what he can do with this team. I want to see Texas basketball good again. I mean, they're ranked 21, I believe, on the year. Other than that, I love seeing old Big East matchups. I love seeing UConn, Syracuse, Georgetown, Syracuse, those kind of teams. I love those matchups during the year. But I think the most interesting team this year has to be Duke with Coach K. You have one of the best coaches. You have some of the best talent. Grayson Allen is polarizing. I mean, you either hate him or you love him. Most people hate him, but there are those few, those Duke fans that love him. He's polarizing. Luke Kennard is great. Jason Tatum. Emile Jefferson is finally back. That's what they missed last year. So this team is stacked. But we're going to see. I think they're the best team so far. I think they're the overwhelming favorite. But we're going to move on. Next topic. Last topic in the Furious Five, we have MLB awards. Baseball is not over yet.
Oh, jeez.
I love it. When we can talk baseball all year long, it's great. So we got, they announced the finalists for each award. So we're going to go through, pick our favorites, pick who we think is going to win, because they're going to pick the winners next week, later on throughout the week. So we have the MVP award race. The American League, you have Mookie Betts for the Red Sox, Jose Altuve for the Astros, and Mike Trout from the Angels. David, who's your favorite going into this for next week? Who do you think's going to win?
You know, for the AL MVP, I'm going to have to go with Mike Trout, just because, I mean, he is...
Even on a losing team?
Yeah, and you heard guys talk about this throughout the year. He put up MVP numbers. It doesn't matter. I personally do not look at your team's record when I'm thinking about MVP quality, because, yes, he was on a losing team, but put him on a winning team and he would be in the discussion, no, like, without a question. So, I mean, I'm going to have to go with Mike Trout. And just the fact that he got into the finalists and was on a losing team shows that voters don't care too much about your overall record.
Yeah, I'm looking at a guy like Mookie Betts. It's not a guy that a lot of people know like Mike Trout, but he's kind of burst onto the scene this year. The Red Sox had a phenomenal year, and people knew they were going to be better than they were last year, but I don't know if anybody expected them to be that good, and Betts was one of the reasons why, so I'm picking him for AL MVP.
I think I'm gonna split the tie. I'm taking Jose Altuve, actually.
Altuve.
Tie
we go.
Yeah, we're going to keep the tie going. Three-way tie. I think, man, this, what is he, 5-5? Led the league in average, I believe.
He's short.
He had 20-plus home runs for a guy who's that small. It's kind of like David Pedroia, who won the MVP five, six years ago.
Pedroia.
Yeah, Dustin Pedroia, one of those short guys and middle infielders, wins the MVP just because his size doesn't match his numbers. But we'll see. That award is unveiled, I believe, Thursday. So look out for that. National League MVP. Denton, we got one of your guys. We got, I got Daniel Murphy.
A little bias in this one, but I'm not picking him. I'm going Chris Bryant.
Yeah, we got Chris Bryant, Daniel Murphy, and Corey Seager from the Dodgers. Real quick, who you have in the National League?
I got Chris Bryant. I think he had a great year. He's one of the main reasons the Cubs had the success that they did. He's really bursted onto the scene here in really only his second year of Major League Baseball. I think he's just a phenomenal player and fun to watch. So I take Chris Bryant.
I want Corey Seager to win because he's a hometown guy. He's from Concord, North Carolina. But I'm going to take Chris Bryant. I just think he's had too good of a year. The Cubs won the World Series. You got to take Chris Bryant.
I think
here.
It's unanimous. Yeah. I'm going Chris Bryant, too. Not much else to say there. Chris Bryant probably going to be.
I would be very pleased if Daniel Murphy wins, though. Don't get it twisted. Like, I would enjoy that.
I would be pleased if Corey Seager won.
I would love to see Daniel Murphy win it just because I want to see all the Mets fans cry.
I
want to go home and see all the Mets fans cry. All right, let's move to Cy Young in the American League. Justin Verlander making a comeback. He's up in there for the MVP, for the Cy Young for the American League. Corey Kluber as well, and then Rick Porcello. It's a tough matchup. There weren't all these numbers didn't blow you away in the American League, but these guys had great seasons, especially win-wise in the win column. David, real quick.
Corey Kluber. No doubt.
Yeah, I'm going Kluber as well. He's fun to watch pitch.
I agree. Unanimous. I think this and the NL MVP are probably the easiest to predict.
Yeah. To predict.
All right, so we're going to move on real quick. National League, Cy Young, Kyle Hendricks, Max Scherzer, another Nationals player, and John Lester.
So two Cubs guys. That's impressive.
Yeah, there's no...
Are the Cubs going to win the MVP and the Cy Young?
There's no avoiding the bias here for me. I'm taking Max Scherzer. He struck out 284 dudes this year. That is virtually unheard of. He led the NL in wins with 20. I'm taking Max Scherzer.
I'm going to take Scherzer, too. As much as I want to give it to the Cubs, I'm going to take Scherzer.
I'll take Scherzer. I think it's unanimous.
It's unanimous.
I mean... The guy's, he's earning his money.
It's unreal.
He's earning the money he makes.